Good morning. We are in a unique occasion that we are doing online sermon and online worship and online church. But we are thankful that we could do this in this digital age, that we can use the technology that so that we can worship our God still together, even though we're separated. Let's worship our God together and sing aloud and sing praises to God, even though it is a difficult time to praise even. But let's do that at our home. We can still worship God, and we can still learn the Word of God, and we can still encourage each other. So, let's do that. And for your encouragement, I want to read 1 Peter chapter 1 first. 1 Peter 1, verses 6 and 7. 1 Peter 1, 6. In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. When we are faced by trials, we may feel it lasts forever. It lasts for a long time. But the Bible says it lasts for a little while. So hang on to this faith, because our faith is tested and by fire, and may be found to result in praise and glory and honor when Jesus Christ reappears again. So let's hang on and stand firm on this solid foundation of Jesus Christ, and go through this trial period of testing and trial together. This morning, actually, I'm not the person who is supposed to preach. I'm supposed to just translate. But Sam Klein, he had to go back to the States this Sunday. So, he did pack and everything today and tomorrow, then move back to the States on Sunday. I hope he can, and I think he can, but anyway. So, I am preaching on behalf of Sam, and we are thankful that he was here. He has been here with us for the last 2 years, and this is going to be his last lesson to us. So, the passage we have is the Gospel of John, Chapter 9, the whole chapter of chapter 9. I'm not reading the passages right here, so if we can stop right here and just read the whole chapter of Gospel of John, chapter 9, right here, it's going to be great, and I'm going to continue preaching from this passage. Okay, so here we go. So, we are now living in a very strange and unique and difficult time. So the first thing I want to do is share a quick funny story with a happy ending. It's a story about the time when all the stores in Japan ran out of the toilet paper. And there's a young man who went to 3 different stores, but he found nothing. With no other options, he started looking on Amazon. And things are even worse here. And regular toilet paper costs 5,000 yen for 8 rolls. But then he has an idea to look for special decorative toilet paper, hoping that other people haven't bought that yet. And ta-da, there it is. 8 rolls of gift-wrapped, cat-themed toilet paper for 2,000 yen. And his problem is solved. And yes, this is a true story. I am that man. Not that I am, Sam is that man. But, seriously, what do we do when our challenges don't end with panchayat? While it is good to resist complaining or criticizing or blaming in face of hard things, This is not about pretending that bad things don't happen, right? In fact, we have courage as believers because we trust God sees and understands our problems better than we do ourselves. That's why we try to fill our words and actions with hope, because we trust God is already at work in all the difficult parts of our life. But even with a focus on faith, it is easy to lose hope in our actions and words and attitudes, even when deep down we trust in God's plans. We may even forget or find it hard to believe that God truly sees and understands our suffering, whether it's small frustration or a major setback. Interestingly, the problems we are facing today, uncertainty, misinformation, and fear, are all old problems. Uncertainty, misinformation, and fear are all old problems. In fact, I think when we look at today's passages, we'll see them all three too here. And at the same time, the real deal solution to these problems remains the same as well. So if we take a fresh look at what Jesus says, and that's here in this story, I hope we'll be able to see how the grace he brought to that situation flows directly to us as well. In this story, so let's look at this story. Right off the bat, people are looking for someone to blame for the problem. The poor blind guy is everyone's first guess. But Jesus immediately shuts down this dangerous thinking and speaks some clarity into the situation. He explains in verse 3. Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him." So he said that the man's suffering was not his own fault. It's not his own fault. And he then asked that, in fact, it's no one's fault. It's no one's fault. The important thing was that this man's difficult situation offered a chance to do the work of God. Then Jesus makes him mad and puts it on the man's edge. And this seems gross. But this is also really cool, because it echoes how God first created mankind out of man. And Jesus then tells the man to go wash in the pool of Siloam, a sacred place used during the Jewish festivals. When the man comes back, he can see, and he is completely healed. The only problem was that all of this happened on the Sabbath day, the day Jewish law forbid people to go out and work. And soon after, hardly anyone believes it actually happened. People find it easier to believe they are seeing a new person in their neighborhood, rather than believe that someone could really be given back their sight. And the townspeople are not the only ones stubbornly confused. The local leaders and Pharisees are deeply troubled by the idea that this man had been healed and had been healed on the Sabbath day. Some Pharisees want to give Jesus the benefit of the doubt, though. They make arguments like, "Everyone knows a sinner cannot do miracles. Maybe Jesus is a good man. Maybe he's special." Then they asked the healed man himself for the report of what happened, and he vouches for Jesus too. He even calls Jesus a prophet. And yeah, that's a really bold claim. Most Jewish leaders at that time argued that no major prophet had appeared for hundreds of years. Yet this man understood that there was something amazing about Jesus, and calling him a prophet was the most incredible thing he knew to say. However, most of the Pharisees think this claim was crazy, so they dismissed the idea that the man had ever been healed. And after this, the Pharisees decided to investigate the healing more closely with a clear expectation that it will prove to be a lie. They simply don't trust Jesus, so everything he does raises their suspicions. And they find the healed man's parents and ask them for more information, but it's hardly a fair situation because his parents know that saying anything in support of Jesus might get them thrown out of their community. So they say only what they can get away with. They acknowledge that the healed man is in fact their own son. Now no one can deny that something amazing has happened. But his parents refused to speak any further and send the Pharisees back to their son, saying that it is his responsibility to explain things for himself. The Pharisees change tactics then. They can no longer deny that something that happened, but Jesus had contradicted their teachings. He healed on the Sabbath. So they move to destroy Jesus' reputation and imply that whatever happened probably happened for dark reasons. They are ruthless and cruel when they return to question the healed man a second time. Even when he said things they should agree with, they shut him down because their goal was to not to find answers but to spin the narrative. They cannot accept Jesus really healed this man because according to Jewish teaching, that would prove that Jesus is a good man speaking on behalf of God. Yet Jesus doesn't fit into their own arrogant understanding of the law. So in the end, they deny everything that healed man said and insulted him and threw him back out into the streets. The sad irony is that the terrible way they treat this man shows how far they've stayed from a true meaning of God's law. Instead of letting Jesus open their eyes to see things clearly, and then clear understanding of God, their arrogance blinded them to the truth right in front of them. In a powerful contrast, when Jesus meets up with this healed man a second time, the man falls on his knees and worships him. And that's verse 38. He said, "Lord, I believe," and he worshiped him. The falling on his knees and worshiping Jesus, this is simply not something Jews did before other human beings. Only pagans or Jews under strong persecution ever bowed down to other people. But this man understood something was radically different about the man who had healed him. He was now able to see that Jesus was God himself. And that was the real purpose of this miracle. The real purpose was to open the eyes to the fact that Jesus was God's Son, and in the process give a clear image of God's mercy. Now remember when I said earlier that my hope was to show how Jesus' mercy in this story flows directly to us too. In our own way, we struggle to truly see, both in spiritual sense and a practical sense. Right now, in the middle of all the coronavirus craziness, we are constantly bombarded with rumors and messages of fear that makes it hard to see and understand what is really happening. It's easy to understand there is a problem, and it's easy to blame someone, or complain. But it's harder to look for and find real solutions. We may look to earthly leaders for clarity, But they are people just like us, vulnerable to the same loneliness and worry and anxieties. If we expect them to be perfect, we will only be more disappointed and afraid in the end. And also in the same way, if we rely on ourselves, we become like Pharisees, unable to see or receive the mercy of God right in front of us. Fear, blame, and confusion are not the only options. Jesus offers a perfect alternative model of how we should respond to suffering. In the face of tough situations like this, we are free from the burdens of having to place guilt or blame. Instead, we look for the way we can deal with it that reveals God's mercy. How does it look like? That may look like something as simple as offering encouragement to our friends. Instead of blaming and criticizing, maybe finding some words of encouragement to the people around us. Or as in-depth as sharing food or sharing medicines. The main idea is simply to reflect God's mercy back out into the world. In this way, we can be the powerful testimony, powerful chance to open our eyes to who God really is. And I think when we do this, our own eyes will open wider to God's presence in our daily lives and God's mercies right in front of us.